Welcome to the Red Bearded Predator Podcast, where average folks talk about walleyes, whitetails, Wisconsin outdoors, and beyond.
It's like a beast. Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
Oh,
that's a nice eye.
Yeah.
That was a fast one. Holy cow.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Red Bearded Predator Podcast. In this week's episode, we are going to feature part two of the 2021 Iowa deer hunting adventure. In this episode, Eric, Bud, and Zeb are going to recap Eric's failure on a giant public land buck and the success that happened a week later, along with a great would you rather question by Zeb that brought up a lot of great memories through our hunting experiences throughout the years. So sit back, grab a cold drink, and enjoy. Thanks for listening.
We got done with
post stitches.
Yeah, so we'll start at post stitches after Zeb got his deer out of there. And I helped him along with that. So I ended up making it to the stand I hunted in the morning, and ended up getting, you know, fired up because we just came off that one buck, and I was feeling really positive. I'm like, yes, it's going to happen this afternoon. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Like, I was 100% sure that I was going to have a shooter. And what, you know what, here comes 3:30, and here comes Mr. Big. Noticed him about 150 yards heading from west to east. I think he came from one doe bedding area, and I think he was one of those mature bucks who wasn't like hardcore chase and hardcore rutting, because he was moving slower than a sloth to where I was sitting. I think he was about to bed somewhere in that bedding area that I busted a lot of bucks out of. And he ended up working his way down a trail in my direction. And I ended up having an epic failure. We'll say that much. I ended up shooting him. Do you have any questions up to this point? I guess I'm kind of all over the map with this.
I mean, what? So he was only like a four corn, right?
Oh, very funny, bud. Very funny.
So, Eric,
go ahead, Zeb.
I will say this. I've drank a decent amount of beers watching that video on that buck. And, you know, you bring up a good point. Do you think he was coming back into bed down, or being the time of day, do you think, you know, he was... What do you think he could have been bedded within, you know, a couple hundred yards there, and then just wanted to come up and check the thick stuff and then maybe do a circle and lay back down? It's hard. It's down there from what I saw. They were just on their feet doing their thing. Like, they didn't care at all, in my opinion. Like, I didn't run into any people when we were down there.
This buck was moving a lot different than the other bucks that I saw. He was moving like a sloth. I have a feeling he was an older, he was an older buck. Because he had no urgency to go find does. He was just chilling, like sniffing the ground, browsing. It wasn't like he was even in rut mode at all. It was different than the other deer I saw.
How long did you watch him before you got a shot at him?
Oh, it was probably a good 15, 20 minutes.
No shit. Well, in the video, because, you know, you got the video on.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got that video on YouTube. And you can watch it. And, of course, you've only, you know, got however many seconds before the shot. Yeah. And I didn't realize, like, you got to watch them that long.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 15, 20 minutes of just slow meandering, just feeding like there's nothing happening. He was just browsing.
I'm hanging in my area.
Yeah.
If the bitch wants the fucking dick, she's gonna come to me.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And
to be uncensored, that's how it is.
Yeah.
When you got it, you got it.
Yeah, no, and he ended up slowly working, and I felt pretty good, and I made a lot of mistakes when it came to the closing time, because he got to about 14 yards, and I thought he was a lot, no, he got to 18 yards, and I thought he was a lot closer than what he was. I thought he was like at 12 yards, if that. And because I got, replaying it in my mind, I got trees confused of what tree was at what range. So that was a pretty bad failure on my part. So I guess we'll get into the failure. He ended up working his way to 18 yards. I ended up pulling back. Shot. The arrow wasn't even in the zip code. I mean, no, it was.
No, it wasn't.
It was.
No offense to you, Eric, but no, it wasn't.
It wasn't in the zip code. It just wasn't. It ended up going high above his back, behind his tail by like a foot. Like, it was just brutal. And
at least, I'll give you this. At least you didn't shoot him in the horn.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. So, I ended up getting, I was pretty pissed. I'm not going to lie. So I ended up calling Bud. Yes.
Called me numerous times.
Yeah, did my whole swearing thing. I thought I gut shot him. I didn't even end up hitting the deer.
And then you said that, I checked the arrow. It wasn't even hit. We're good. Like, well, all right. At least we got that going for us.
Yeah. Then I called my dad, and then I bitched to him. It was just a big bitch afternoon. And, being a buck that big, I don't know. You guys seen him in slow motion. I think, he's 170, maybe 180-inch deer.
We don't talk about it.
But anyway, I ended up screwing the pooch on that deer, and I was down in the dumps. I went back to the truck, couldn't sleep that night. I was just messed up, and I was like, we'll go back to the same spot in the morning. I left everything up there. I left my stand out there. I was like, I'll be back out there. And ended up sitting in the morning. I didn't see anything that morning. I mean, it makes sense. Between Zeb shooting that deer, me shooting that deer, at that deer, me busting that bedding area up, I'm like, yeah, we did a number on this area. So the rest of the weekend, I ended up just pretty much scouting. I could tell I wasn't mentally there. I'm not sure if you guys have ever been there before, where it's like you want to hunt, but you're just.
You're drained.
Yeah.
So, Eric, kind of to speak to that, I've been there. Man, I've been there a lot. Like, yeah, I know exactly what you're going through or what you went through, but. You know, I started to think about, like, the silver lining to a lot of that, and I know you mentioned that, too, that, okay, you didn't gut shoot him, but, I mean, think about growing up before you really started, like, targeting big deer like that.
Yeah.
Think about how much of a success it was for you. Did you ever think that you were going to get to spend 20 minutes within rifle range watching a buck like that? Like, that's something a lot of people on the planet don't get to do.
Yeah.
And you put yourself, that's a
guess big... what? Never been there.
On a 170, I haven't either, bud. I mean, that's such a win. And that was one of the things, like, I started to take away when I started hunting, trying to shoot a big deer with my bow, because rifle season don't matter. I shoot spikes all day when I got a gun in my hand. But, you know, when you start targeting animals like that, and even if you don't get a shot at them or you blow it, like, look at the success that you had for yourself there and how much more confidence that gives you in your scouting abilities. I mean, you took me in there. I shot one. You know, a dandy buck, second biggest buck I've ever killed. And then that day, you ended up seeing just an absolute slob on public, and you put yourself there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the opportunity. And I told that, I give Eric shit about all the time. Boy, I saw this one. I saw this one, this one. And I'd be like, yep, sat all weekend. I watched squirrels. It was fun.
Yeah. You guys may take this the wrong way. Yeah, it was a little bit of confidence booster, but you know what? That just fueled me more. Like, it really did.
It did.
I'm more driven than I've ever driven before. Like,
oh, I'm right there with you.
Like, it's like, okay, I can do it. Yeah, that's where the confidence part. I did this once. I can do it again. I'll shoot. I'm a little bit more liberal with what I'll shoot with a gun, but like with a bow now, I want the top tier animals in an area. I like having that moment. It's like, let's freaking go now. Like now you kind of know what, you know, all the big guys feel like when they hit that kingpin, like the Disquistos, Infaults, you know, it's an addicting feeling. And I want that feeling again. I want to be put in that position.
Hey, I want a Zeb and Eric buck. That's what I want.
I know exactly what Eric talked about. I mean, so last year I killed an absolute like giant. Like, so I killed an 8-pointer that was just, I mean, I'll probably never shoot another buck bigger than that buck. I mean, he was, you know, over 160-inch 8-pointer. I mean, I hate throwing scores out there, but just to give you an idea, like, it was an absolute monster. And seeing him come through the woods, and like Eric said, seeing that, having an experience with a deer that caliber, it's like, oh, okay, you shoot one, it's like, on to the next one. Just to be able to continually put yourself in those positions, like, you got to have a passion in life. And like, that's the passion right now. I get exactly what you're saying, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these are public land deer that we're chasing. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
I had a video one 2 years ago. No, 3 years ago. I shot a really nice 10. And then I had a video one that come up, I don't know, 20 yards from me. I still got the video on my phone, and I just had to take pictures of him because he gave me the shot, and I was like, I can't, I already got my tag filled. But you know, just a dream picket fence.
No, you just shut the video off and you have your wife take it.
Well,
how do I do that?
Funny thing about that is she shot an 8-pointer the day before.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What about your dad? Does your dad have a bow tag?
At that point, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Well, that's but, right. You're a wildlife biologist. No, you don't. Yep.
But yeah, anyway. So I screwed the pooch on that buck. Spent the next 2 days scouting. I did a hunt. It was kind of like a whole hum, just be out there. But I mean, I was still driven enough to scout. Like, I feel like no matter how crappy you feel, there's no excuse for not scouting. Like,
no.
Like, they're scout. That's all I got to say. It's the most important thing in whitetail deer hunting. Like,
trust me, we learned that during gun hunting.
Yeah. So we fast forward a week. Kind of funny, a week later, the next Friday. And I was looking at maps throughout the week of that property. And I ended up actually, maybe I shared both of you that pin. I was like, there's a thick bedding area on that backside that's 2.5 miles deep. And I was like, we got south winds coming in. I guarantee you no one's been back there because it's so far back. And Bud's like, yeah, it looks good. Zeb's like, hey, that's where I go too. So
wasn't there a fence line or something that pinched him down into that spot even more? Or was that the other side of there?
Are you talking about the day you came down to help me drag mine out?
Yeah.
Yeah. There is those bluffs. Then there was like those thick aspens, and there was open hardwoods, and there was that small little ditch type thing that kind of pinched them down, along with there's a fence crossing there too, I guess. Barbed wire fence where the fence was actually knocked down. So it looked really good on a map. So it was the thickest bedding area that I knew wasn't hunted. And I ended up getting out there at 2:33 in the morning because I knew it was going to take two and a half hours to get set up, you know, carrying the stand on my back and never being back there before. I knew it was going to take some time to pick a tree in the dark. So ended up walking back there, had to take some care of some business about halfway back. And after I got towards that bedding area, I started noticing, I noticed quite a few big rubs in the dark. So I was like, something's going on back here. Because being able to see rubs in the dark with limited light and seeing the quality of rubs, could tell it was going to be good. So I ended up taking my time, working my way up the ridge. And it was similar to what Zeb's setup was, where I had to walk in the valley and made a 90-degree angle towards that tree stand to make sure that I could shoot to where those deer were crossing. And I actually got towards the top of the ridge, and I ended up just standing in a spot for about, I don't know, probably 10 to 15 minutes debating what tree to get into. Like, it wasn't like one of those things where it's like, work your way up to the ridge, set up in a tree. I was like, I have to pick the right tree. So I just sat there with both my lights on, and I was like, that tree looks good. This tree looks good. This tree looks better. Ended up choosing a one that had some really good back cover to it, and that was part of the success of this hunt. And ended up setting up in that tree, and got my camera gear set up, whatnot. And right before daylight, all of a sudden in the alders, aspens, there is two bucks fighting. Like, some of the craziest sounds were coming out of that aspen thicket that I've never heard of before. And it was just a straight up brawl. It was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had as a deer hunter. And throughout the morning, it was great deer movement. I saw a couple small sixes, small eights. And then I saw about a 110, 120 inch eight, 2 year old. Saw a doe in heat with another buck. And the flurry just continued all morning. So I knew I was in the game. It was just a matter of time before a good buck coming through. Do you guys have any questions up to this point?
So how much scouting do you have on that property?
On that part of the property, I had no scouting. It was all e-scouting.
Okay.
Besides the front side that me and Zeb hunted earlier, or in the previous week.
So with your setup, were you on the leeward side?
Yep, leeward side.
So and that thought that you were going to get him cruising there all day, or were you worried about just the morning? Or,
well, there was a couple cornfields to my south, So I thought I would catch him coming back to bedding in that morning. But due to that, those thick aspens, I had a feeling they'd just be cruising that all day because those does would be bedding in those aspens. And there was actually a CRP field up there too, where I could see does bedding as well. So yeah, that was kind of the setup. I was committed after seeing all that movement that early in the morning. So it was, like Zeb said, the leeward side. I'm coming right around, 10 o'clock? All of a sudden, I see movement to my right. I'm like, oh, shit, better get the camera on. So got the camera on. He was doing the zombie trot is, I don't know, that's what I like to call it. He was in zombie mode. He was doing exactly opposite of the deer I attempted to shoot the previous week. And another thing that I want to bring up before I shot that buck, there must have been a doe in heat in the valley that another buck was locked up with because I was actually watching them about 15 minutes before I shot this buck. So I think he got a smell of her, I think, and was going to go challenge that buck for that doe. But he ended up working like the top third or so, and he was doing the zombie trot. And like Bud was talking earlier, there's times to do the mert and there's times not to do the mert. And I had him on camera. I did the mert thing. He stopped right in the camera. I was pumped up. I was going to shoot this buck. And wouldn't you know it, his vitals were covered by the one piece of wood that was sitting there, or the one log that was sitting there. So I'm like, son of a bitch. I'm like, shit, this is not going to work out. If I have to do this again, he might bust.
At least you didn't force it.
Yeah.
Out of buck the size of that, there's a lot of guys that would have probably tried to force it.
Yeah, yeah. And I was drawn back at this point, too. So I was like, I need to give him more room to move. And I was like, I have to stop him at the next two or three steps because he was getting close to private too. So everything was close. It was getting tight with everything coming in. And he ended up taking two more steps. And I think I did the loudest murt in my life. It was more of a murt. And I was like, I need to get that son of a bitch to stop right now. And he stopped at 22 yards, is able to get the yardage that I wanted on him. It was, took my time, was not wearing a glove. That's something I didn't bring up before. On the big guy, I was wearing a glove, and I never practiced with a glove. And I think the bow twisted in my hand. That's what we've kind of determined the problem was with my shot on that big one. So I was not wearing a glove, made a perfect shot. Like, I know it was a perfect shot when I made it because there was blood gushing out as soon as the entry hole. I've never seen that happen on a deer before. And
yeah, because I got a phone call. Fuck, smoked up.
He looked way more calm on the video.
Yeah, I'm pretty calm. Like after a I don't know. I'm not. I like to, until the dab's done, I don't get too excited. Like, when he gets back to the truck is when I get excited.
I thought I was an idiot the way I was pissing on myself after I shot that one.
It's just my personality, I guess. I don't know. I try and stay focused till the job's completely done. But,
Nah, I got a phone call. He wasn't focused. It was a fuck smoked up. Got him!
Okay. Fucked him! Maybe I was a little excited with you, bud. But anyway, he ended up running towards the top of the hill, ended up coming down the hill, ended up coming back onto public, and I guess that was the story of that buck.
Oh, that's not the whole story.
Oh, that was just the story of, I guess, the kill.
The kill, not the recovery.
Yeah, the recovery. That was a whole nother whole nother shit show. Or as Zeb likes to say, fuckery. So I call Bud, I call my mom, I let everybody know, you know, and give the BBD sign and all that stuff. So actually, Zeb, you were the second phone call. I called Bud, and I'm like, shit, I need some help to get this bastard out of here. I'm like, frickin' Zeb owes me one here. I need him now.
I wasn't going to let you down.
I'm glad Zeb jumped up because I'm like, I really don't want to drive all the way down there again. Let alone I know what I'm getting into.
Yeah.
I got down there decent, but when he called me, I had just picked up my son from daycare. And
yeah, you probably like just got done shooting a deer or something like that.
Not that day. I had that day off. I have had a good year though. So I get this call from Eric and I was like, oh Jesus Christ, it's 10:30 in the morning. I know exactly what this is gonna be. And
you're the same way as I am. I finally learned that, like, wait, Eric's not texting me. I'm like, either he's going to be cussing me out or it's good. Either he's cussing me out or I'm butchering a deer tonight. It's one or the other.
Exactly. And I mean, it was, all right, how am I going to navigate this? Luckily, my mother-in-law lives in town. So I ended up calling her and I was like, hey, it's me again.
Hey. But you want to hang out with the grandkids or something? You want to take them to, like, the circus or something?
Exactly. She's been awesome. You know, she's a great person. So she come over and she's like, yeah, sure, no problem. When do you need me there? And I gave her a time and I was like, all right, sweet. So I texted Eric back and it was 11:30. And he had called me at, I don't know what, you probably shot that thing, what do you say, like 10:30, 10:27, I think I got a call, if I remember right.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting the okay, and I made it down there by 1 o'clock, and I threw in a wagon with wheels on it, like a big old wagon. I threw in my deer cart, and I threw in both of my, packs I have, my pack frames for like all west hunting. And when I got there, I pulled into the parking lot. I got sat down, looked at my phone, realized, yeah, I don't have reception. I look up, and there's this big, beautiful red beard walking at me out of the woods with a big old grin on his face. And I was like, oh, perfect timing.
Yeah.
Wait, why did it take you so long to get here?
I was like,
shit, this thing is that far back, ain't it?
Well,
he was lying to me like it was 200 yards off the road, but
no. Well, I was taking my time doing an interview. I, you know, enjoying the moment. And I was like, Zeb won't be down here for a while. And I'm like, I'll take my time walking back to the parking lot. And I get there and I'm like, holy shit, he got down here fast. Like, I think it took you a freaking hour. I'm like, how freaking fast was he going?
Hey, man. I wouldn't miss it for the world. I love that. But, my fault, like, and all.
Yeah. But Zeb got down there, and, yeah, he's asked me, where'd you shoot it? And I point to him on the map, and I'm like, oh, okay. Let's party. So.
Well, didn't we have a big conversation about how we should get it out of there? We're like, oh, the cart will be fine.
Yeah, that was a 15-20 minute conversation in itself. Like, you're like, it's pretty flat back there after we get them off the hill. Cart should be all right.
Yeah, after that third ridge, it's flat.
Yeah.
Well, Eric, say hill, but I mean, we're talking 300-400 feet in elevation, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, trust me. I've hunted with Eric enough. Yeah, his hill. Yeah, well, we just got to go up this little bit, and then we can hunt this morning. Yeah, 1,000 feet elevation straight up off a freaking road in like 100 foot.
Yeah, I'm looking for like this little monk guy to hand me a like oxygen tank, you know, climbing the mountains, but...
Yeah. Trust me, Eric's learned to bring Coors Light in the truck, because that's my reward for coming back out of the woods.
No, that That's no, there is going to be a new thing this next year where I'm going to actually put Coors Light in my backpack and have Bud follow me up the hill.
Yeah.
So he can get beer once he gets to the top of the hill. So that's a big thing that I'm bringing into next year. But anyway, Zeb and I work our way 2.5 miles back, and we get to the ridge. We're like, huh, how are we going to take this out of here with the cart?
Yeah, the cart.
Yes, we had the cart. And, like, Zeb got it out because, I mean, his dad's a butcher, so it took Zeb a total of 30 seconds to gut my deer out. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
It was in a really unique spot. I mean, it was perfect for gutting. He was downhill and...
Yeah, so... Yeah, he ended up gutting it out, and we're like, how are we going to... Well, he knew how to put it on the cart, but we're like, how can we get it down this hill without getting hurt?
Well, so, because you guys already have experience. Like, let's not get another first aid kit involved.
We had one with us.
Yeah, you brought one with you.
Yeah, so on the second trip, you guys brought one.
Yeah, we were just 2.5 miles back without cell phone coverage. So, like, if the shit hits the fan, we're kind of screwed here. So,
You can't call the helicopter this time.
No. So, Zeb, we got the deer on the cart. He's like, I'm going to tie some stuff to the backside so I can pull as you guide it down the hill. So, that actually ended up working really well. So, we ended up... pretty much going straight down the hill. Zeb would just guide me if they're logs or whatnot. And we got to this ditch. And we were actually moving through the ditch pretty well. And it got to a point where we just kind of, I don't want to say cliffed out, but we're ditched out because the ditch got so steep. we're like, we can't get this up the freaking hill on the cart. So we ended up having to take the deer off the cart. And after we got him off the cart decided to tip on us. And in that process, the plastic wheel broke. So we're like, shit.
Well, so I told you, like, when, after I shot that one, we were bullshitting. I was like, all right, if you shoot one, make sure it's small if it's way back there. Otherwise, don't call me. And then you called me anyways, and I showed up like an idiot, and you shoot like a buck. I guarantee that buck was well over 200 pounds dressed.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a big, big deer. And that side pressure on that cart, like, so it had the spokes were, what do you call it, like spindles. They were like those big, heavy, thick plastic, you know, hard polymer wheels or whatever. Well, one side load and cracks, boom. Eric looks at me and he goes, "What now?" And I was like, "I don't know."
Yeah, pretty much. So then our next thought was how to get him up the freaking bank, and I don't think we even got to that point where we put him up the bank, did we? Or did we get him up the bank with just the two of us?
We cut him in half first, or we cut him in. So I cut the head off, and then I cut the back half off. And for anybody listening that is going to think, you know, we're idiots for how we cut up the deer to get him out of there, from my understanding...
Kind of like when I had to butcher it, you know? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I guarantee you did. because, so from what I understood from Iowa's rules, you have to take everything out with you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've been out west. We've, you know, shot some animals out there, and, you know, we've done the gutless method where you got the quarters and the game bags, and it works out perfect. You know, you can leave the leftover carcass there. Well, here we can't. So what we've done in the past with pack frames is you cut the head off if you're not going to mount it, and then you cut the head off right below, like, the head-neck junction. And then you go back behind the last rib and you cut that off. The only thing that sucks is you lose depending on how you butcher it, an inch to 2 inches of the loin, you know, because you expose that to everything.
Yeah, Eric lost some back strap.
Yeah, and that's the part that really sucks. But where we were at, it's like, you know, I don't know how else to get this yeah. out of here.
Just fucking hang on, let's go!
Exactly. So we ended up doing that, where we had three pieces of the deer, and we got them up on top of that ditch. And then I think we sat there, and we actually tried to use some straps and carry them out that way, but it was just too much. Well, that chest cavity of that deer, didn't you weigh it, Eric? It was over 100 pounds?
Yeah, it was. That was over 110 pounds, I think, bud. Then the back half was another 90, and that's not even counting the head. So
yeah,
it was like 220-pound deer, 225-pound deer. Like,
yeah, that was a big, big whitetail.
Yeah.
I butchered it up, and like, yeah, that was, even with all the waste of, like, all the grass you guys dragged us through and all that, it's like, Jesus Christ, there's still a lot of meat.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And like you said there, that's what sucks about it when you cut it up like that without, like, instantly putting on a pack, because we still had to get it up and out of that ditch. But what do? You know, I mean, it sucks skinning a whitetail when they're not hanging up like that, but what the hell do you do?
Yeah.
And Eric and I were kind of in a time crunch because us two smart individuals didn't have a flashlight with us either.
And you're already a day into it.
Yeah. And my phone was dead. And we actually tried putting the wheel back on the cart. We're like, this ain't going to happen. Yeah, so we made the 2 mile. We were about a quarter mile done, so we made the 2 1/4 mile trek back to the truck. Like, we're going to put them on some frame packs. So then we made 2 1/4 mile back to the deer again. And I'm just exhausted at this point because I already have 12 and a half miles on the boots that day. Zeb's like, this will work. I'm like, okay, we'll do it. And like, he ended up cutting it in half, like he was talking about. And I've never packed out anything before. And, you know, it was kind of a shock to the system that I was literally going to carry the front half with the bones in and everything of the deer. And the first time trying to stand up, I didn't get up.
You started crapping, remember?
Yeah. And Zeb's like, I'll help you stand up. I'll lift the back of you, and once you get up, you'll be fine. So he ended up grabbing the back of it. I ended up trying to stand up. I was able to do so successfully. And after I got up, it wasn't bad. Not bad at all. And Zeb was able to put the half of the deer on his back, and the head too was on his back, and the adventure of the pack out began. And
did you get punctured?
No, did not get punctured.
Well, so, all right, we are ahead of Zeb's hunt.
Yeah, so Zeb got me a walking stick. I'm happy he got that, because like Zeb said, this is multiple creek crossings that is about knee deep or so, just under knee deep. And it's
the rocks are slippery than hell, algae cover.
Yeah, and they're perfect rocks to roll your ankle on. So with 110 pounds on your back, I mean, not the most ideal pack out, but we had to do what we had to do. And we were actually trying to look to get out of back way, but we didn't have a fishing pole and we didn't have a fishing license, so we couldn't go out the back way. Although that wouldn't have been a bad way to get out. And the pack out actually didn't take that long after we got on our feet. Ended up taking about, 45 minutes to an hour?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a really underrated way to pack out a whitetail. I mean, they're all not going to be over 200 pounds. And it it sucks for like the post processing of them like that, but it makes a difference. That buck that my brother shot that day that, you know, me and you killed that one down there, they did the same thing. And yeah, it sucks initially, but how in the hell else are you going to get them out of there, you know, in those hills like that?
You're not. No. You're not. And, yeah, we ended up making it back to the truck at, I don't know what time. It was actually kind of cool when we got back to the truck because, you know, Zeb's doing his video Snapchat bullshit and,
hey, I got like 80 followers. I'm kind of a big deal in the social media.
Yeah, no, Zeb has a hell of a Snapchat. He's pretty entertaining. But it was funny. We got to the last creek crossing, and I stop, and I'm like, I wasn't moving. I was like, man, Zeb, this sucks, but this is the most enjoyable moment right here. I'm like, I just stood there. I sat there with the sun coming down with the deer on my back. Zeb was walking in front of me. I mean, it was just one hell of a moment just to stand there. And I was like, this is what hunting's about. Like, this is what dreams are made out of. I know probably not for most people, but for me, I was just standing there. I was just kind of in shock and awe after everything we had done. Not just with my deer, but your deer the week previous. I mean, both of us put 11, 12 miles on that day again. It was like just an amazing hunt. Like just that moment with the water rushing over the rapids and everything. Sunset and that was a great moment. That was, I wanted to savor that. So I was like kind of looking at me goofy. Why are you standing there with a 110-pound deer on your back just standing there.
Embrace the suck.
Yeah. But
that's a big part of it, man. Like, you know, those packouts, they're fun, but they're not fun at the time. Let me rephrase that. You don't realize the fun you're having at the time until you look back on it. Like right now, you know, we're on Skype. I don't know if my camera's not working, but your guys' is. And I can see that big ass smile on your face. Like, yeah, that smile wasn't there when we were halfway back to the truck, but now looking back.
I watched that video through the field.
But you know, those are the things that are just fucking awesome. And you know, the biggest thing I took away from that whole Iowa experience is to not be afraid to let your guard down when you meet somebody new. You know, like what we had done. I mean, that was freaking cool. I did not expect to get guided because Eric guided me the buck I killed. I mean, that is not how I usually roll. And it was awesome to have that come together like that. And it was just, you know, I watch those Snapchats. Like I save all of them on my phone. You know, I've got them all the way back to, I kind of started that whole thing when the first trip that we ever went out west. And now I look back on it and, you know, seeing the Snapchats of that pack out and all those other ones. And, you know, me and you were bullshitting. I don't know when it was. It was after this all happened. And I think it was the night your video came out. It's like, you know, it's such a pain in the ass to film. And like I said, I kind of dabbled in filming. I really haven't fallen in love with it yet. But seeing like how you put together that video and piecing everything together and like reliving those moments, like when you walked up to me and I'm just like sitting there like an idiot just nodding my head like, oh yeah dude, I'm still like on cloud nine. Or like seeing that raw moment of you walking up to me in that Snapchat video with that buck on your back, just, you know, not jacked about life at the moment, you know, you're just trying to make that next step.
Yeah.
And you know, certain people listening, we might sound like pussies or whatever, but man, it's hard work. Like there ain't no two ways about it. Like we're pretty big dudes. It's still hard. Like,
yeah,
it's not easy.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, I did not, like you said, I did not see my Iowa season going like that. It overall experience, like, and I don't think it's so much the just being in the state of Iowa. I think it was just how everything just played out. It was just so cool. Like, it would have been cool no matter where it was, how it played out. But
I mean, yeah, get out of your comfort zone. I'm a guy that is actually, it sounds bad, but I've met a lot of freaking dudes in parking lots who've been pretty freaking cool. And, I'm going to continue to try and meet other people. Most guys you don't drive with, but, I mean, I jived with you. There's not a lot of guys who, you know, embrace a suck. And can I admire a guy who embraces a suck? And you made a comment to me after we were going towards my deer. I was like, I'll follow you. And he's like, are you sure you want to do that? I'm like, hell yeah, buddy. And you can't find a lot of guys with it like that. And Bud's kind of the same way. He's usually not the leader, but Bud's like, hey, I'll follow you. So, yeah, it's tough to find guys that will, you know, follow you and put in that effort.
Well, I think that kind of speaks to, you know, the camaraderie and the tradition of deer hunting that, you know, not to completely segue topics, but, you know, you look at the traditional deer camps and how that's kind of fading away right now.
Yep.
And that's something that, to me personally, I hold on to with every grain of my body, like that tradition. Like I'm still lucky enough to have one of those, and to meet somebody, you know, not to get all fucking mushy, blah, 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 yeah. Dumb. But, I mean, to meet somebody that you can connect with and have that same passion, and to know this winter when I call you up, be like, hey, Eric, you want to go start some fuckery down here in this new piece that I haven't looked at yet? And, you know, we can go scout. And because, you know, we haven't mentioned this yet, but we only live, what, hour and a half from each other probably?
Yeah, hour and 23 minutes I did on Google Earth.
And we started bullshitting, and we ended up, you know, we've been on a lot of the same pieces.
Yeah.
And to have that, like, it's not just a traditional deer camp gun season kind of thing for me. It's like at my house, you know, I host, you know, we have a rut camp here, and just having that like camaraderie and.
Yeah. And that's something, you know, as mentioned to Bud, that, I mean, Bud's kind of the same way we are. I'm like, man, me and Bud, we really don't have that gun camp. Me and Bud are both jealous of kind of that camp you guys have up in Hayward, where we're like, man, maybe we can join Zeb's group, even if we're down in Richland Center here, or up in Sparta. I mean, it'd be kind of sweet to have a bowl camp like that to be a part of. So,
absolutely, man. We have one, you know, every year at my house here, and it's, yeah, you guys are welcome no matter what, even if it's, you know, you don't, if you guys are, you know, want to stay down at Richland Center too, that's the same thing. Cause goddamn, I got to drive 45 minutes to a lot of the spots that end up, you know, in certain areas. And, you know, growing that camaraderie, like you grow those relationships with hunters and stuff like that out of the strangest situations, you know? And once you get it, you know, it's something that you got to hold on to because it's different.
Yeah. And that's even coming into this year. Like I mentioned, Bud, we were both kind of talking and we're like, man, I have drive early season, but when it's 85 degrees out and you got to fucking push yourself by yourself, that's kind of shitty. And that's where me and Bud just kind of came together this off season, and we're like, if we want to be more driven and better hunters, why not hunt together when it's tough, when it's 85 degrees outside, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's kind of the plan we got going. I like, that sounds like a great season to me. Like, you know, start off hunting what me and Bud were talking about, and to have a pre-rut / rut camp, you know, where me and Bud can kind of join your group and, I think that sounds like a hell of a time. And
we've had some good luck. I mean, this year we knocked down more than we ever have, but usually somebody, you know, gets lucky. But it's not, man, it's not about shooting deer. It's about getting together, talking stupid, make fun of each other, and
Yeah.
You know, yeah,
it's cool too, because you can do that, but you also have, you know, 5-6 other guys to, you know, where the deer at. You can cover so much more ground. And it makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense why THP is so successful, because they got 5-7 guys in their group, you know, where if we can, you know, work together. I mean, I'm like you and Bud. I'm like, I don't care who gets the buck as long as somebody's getting something down.
Well, you learn so much like that now, because so where I'm at, my brother used to live with me, and we used to run this country together, but now, like, I'm the only one running the country, you know, scouting my ass off, and then I find all these sweet spots, but I'm one dude. Like, I would love, and I love it when, you know, people come down and hunt with me, like,
my dad. Yeah, I see that with Eric, too.
It's ridiculous. Like, you know, my dad and mom will ask me, like, hey, what do you want? I was like, just give dad some money in the gas tank. Let him come down and hunt with me. I got spots I want to put him. And it's just putting people spots. And like what you did for me, Eric, like seeing somebody kill something where you set somebody up.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I would take that over any of the deer I have on my wall. Like,
yep.
Just worrying about the next one and seeing someone else smile is just huge.
Yep. And that's like what I was telling Bud, kind of why I'd want to hunt with him more, like, where we can meet up in the middle and do kind of the pre-rut thing down here, is because my biggest goal next year is to get Bud a public land 8-pointer. He's been talking about that for the last, I don't know how many years. Like, that's my goal this year. Like, that, yeah, that's what it is. Bud's worked hard enough too. And that's the thing. Bud has a kid and everything, but he has scouted his ass off the last 5 years. It just has not panned out. Like, it's a lot different.
I scouted all the properties, and it really sucked because, like, you and me scouted a shit ton of property that one spring.
Yeah.
And then it flooded. Like, everything. Everything we scouted flooded.
Yeah. And Zeb, just to give you a little background, it was everything along the bay. And, you know, when we got all those rains and all that big snow melt, so he couldn't hunt them.
Yeah, literally, like, we scouted all those properties along the bay, and then, like, the next spring, boom, Great Lakes went up 3 feet. Boom, yeah, all the properties gone.
Oh, well, man, that's a kick to the shorts.
Yeah, and especially Bud found a super nice shed in one of the spots.
Yeah. It was an 11-point shed.
Yeah, wow. Within 20 minutes of Green Bay, too, like on public land. Like,
wait, so was it two sheds that had 11 or 11 on one side?
11 on one side.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That is a tank.
Yeah, there's no bucks. There's no bucks on public land within 20 minutes of Green Bay. Sure. Sorry. That's just a chip that Bud and I always have on our shoulder that, you know, deer hunting in Wisconsin sucks. You know, that's the biggest falsity I've ever heard. You just got to work.
There's a lot that goes into it. And
yeah,
with whitetails, it's different. Like, that's what drives me every time. Like, this might sound bad, and it's kind of alluding to what you said earlier in the podcast where, you know, it drove you more, but, you know, I shot, one down in Iowa with you, and then I shot that 10 here, and my brain instantly goes to, all right, that was sweet. Holy shit, that's a big shed.
It's not really big. It's got, like, a lot of shit going on.
Yeah, but, Bud, to me, that's big.
Bob Glenn, like, and we found that, within 100 yards of the road?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Man.
It was weird.
And that shed was, it wasn't that spring. We found it in spring, but it wasn't that spring shed. Like, I found a bunch of moss on it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool when we found that shed. So it's not like Bud hasn't put in the work. I know he has. That's a difference when, and I knew just based off of talking to you, you put in the work. Like when I hunt with guys who don't put in the work, that's, I won't help a guy out like that if I know they're not putting the work in. It's, I don't know. It's kind of just.
You want to end this podcast, Eric, or what?
No, we're going to keep her going. Actually, we probably should. So basically,
I want the ending point right here, because you are, this was your virgin year, Iowa. That was your virgin year, Iowa. Here's my closing statement. Was it worth putting in the money and the effort to go hunt Iowa? Well, because you are both, I know you're both Southwest Wisconsin hunters. Yeah. Which would you rather do? Put your time into Southwest Wisconsin or spend the money and go to Iowa?
Eric, you tackle this one first.
All right. It's going to be a long-winded answer. So after 3 weeks of hunting of Iowa, I would have been like, I'll just save my money, stay in southwestern Wisconsin. I mean, see the same caliber bucks. But after, you know, that week played out or 2 weeks played out, and, you know, it sounds mushy, after meeting Zeb and just meeting all the people down there and how cool they were and how encouraging they were, after Zeb shot his buck, every single trout fisherman was like, hell yeah, like jacked up for Zeb. Like,
well, when I had the heart of my buck in my hand when we were walking back out to the truck, and
your legs bleeding out, but whatever.
Yeah. No, this was before I got stabbed. This was on the way back the first time. And we talked to this older gentleman, and he's like, oh, man, he saw the heart, and he was all jacked up. He's like, my grandson and his dad are fishing right over here. You got to show him that. He's going to think it's so cool. And we did. It was awesome. A random two dudes rolling through with camel and bows with a heart in their hand. And you can't run into this guy, and he's like, you got to show my grandson. Like, how cool is that? Like, it's just, yeah. And that kid, he wasn't old enough to hunt yet, but he was into it. And yeah, Everyone that we met down there, like, I'll echo what Eric was saying. It was just, it was cool. There was no animosity that I had Wisconsin plates and they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So was it totally worth it to, like, get your Iowa tags? That's what I want to know. Is it totally worth it?
After looking back on the whole thing, yes.
So, Eric, you got any more to add to that, or I'll?
I just, the overall experience, I mean, was just an amazing experience. And I don't even say the deer made the trip. It was all about the people. All about the experience, all about, you know, the rapids as you're hunting, the hills, the sunsets. I mean, you can have that southwestern Wisconsin, no doubt about that, but I really think the people made the hunt, which is kind of weird.
I'll agree with that 100%, but I will also add a few things. So when Eric and I met at the truck, you know, we had been, that was my third day in Iowa. Like, I had the last week in October to hunt Iowa, and then I had rut camp coming at my house, and I can't leave everybody hanging. So I was kind of like at that point where it sounds dumb to spend, you know, whatever it is, $1,000 by the time I get done with preference points and everything, close to anyways. Yeah. And only budget, you know, 5 days to do it, 7 days to do it. Well, I had hunted down there mid-October one day, you know, to no avail, but you know, we were talking, and it's like, man, you know, I can go over to Wisconsin and, you know, I can see deer and have a good time doing it, But I think what clouded my judgment, and I don't know if Eric, you know, kind of has the same thought or not. I won't put words in his mouth, but as soon as I stepped into the woods down there, I started seeing shooters in my book. And they might be, you know, 3.5-year-olds or whatever that some guys would, you know, turn their nose up at Wisconsin, but that's not how I was raised. Like, man, when I see a buck that's got a rack on its head that's pretty decent, like, I fucking come unglued. Like, that's just how I'm wired. And from day one, my first 3 days, I think I saw 9 that I would have shot. And, you know, I met Eric in that parking lot. At that time, I think I saw 5, you know, as I was hunting that I would have shot, never had opportunities with. And me and him had that conversation where, ah, man, I don't know if it's worth the money and this, that, or the other thing. And then, you know, we hunted together and that happened. And that was like, all right, that was freaking awesome. Like, it all came together and I got to hunt with somebody. Like, I usually, like, that's my hunting style, usually with somebody, and we, you know, tag team a property. And like Eric said, the people and all that came together. And then being able to drive down and help him and seeing the caliber of deer that he shot, because my buck was great, but the one he shot's freaking hammer. Like, that buck is a, I said it, I bet you he wanted to slap me how many times I said how big that buck was when we were walking up to it. I mean, that thing is a beast in my book. And, you know, a few weeks go by and me and my brother are talking and he's like, so when are we sending in again? And I was like, what? He's like, dude, you need to think about how many deer you saw. And I don't know if it was because I was hunting by myself for the first so many days, and I'm not trying to sound like a pussy, but hunting by yourself is tough. Like, especially when you're hunting. Yeah. And then you're throwing that kind of terrain, you know, and like people want to sound big and bad, like, oh, I walk a mile into my stand, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's great. But when you actually do that, that is not as fun as people on the internet make it sound to be.
Nope.
And we'll do it, like, we do it all the time. But I don't want to brag about it and beat my chest for doing it, because halfway back to the truck, I'm pissed off. And, you know, just hearing that from an outsider perspective with my brother made me realize, like, Iowa is a special place. Like, when I watched that YouTube video Eric put out and he talks about the management program that Iowa does, it's different down there. Like, I don't know if my wife's going to agree with me spending that much money on another tag, but, you know, every 3 to 4 years, it's truly, if you're passionate about whitetails, I think it is something that you should do once. I really do. So my long-winded answer is yes, 100% worth it.
Agree with that, Eric?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And not to be more long-winded, but like Zeb was saying, hunting by yourself does suck. I mean, besides opening weekend, I lived out of my truck in Iowa. Like, it's a grind.
Even opening weekend, you lived out of your truck. I slept in my truck.
Yeah. But
you look like a homeless person when I rolled up. There's a cot and a mystery.
Yeah, trust me, he is. I swear, like, when he called in dog tractors, I swear, they felt sorry for him because they just thought he was fucking a homeless dude just trying to get some meat.
And I don't have one of these fancy freaking truck setups. My truck setup is a tote of camping
link,
gear.
Link YouTube video, link, whatever. Yeah.
And a heater and a cot. It's, I'm minimalist, but hey, it's what gets the job done.
And also no weapon to protect yourself with no cell phone reception from the, you know, dirty potential meth heads that could come rob you in the middle of the night down in the middle of a hole.
Yeah.
Hey, I had a weapon. Eric was on his own, but I had a weapon.
I'm a little bit of a wild boy when it comes to that.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Like, I don't know. I don't get worried about it.
What it comes down to is you both recommend, even though it takes 4 years.
Four years.
At what, $75 a year?
$60.
It's totally worth it.
Yeah.
I've hunted a few states, and I mean, I hunted Nebraska.
Well, trust me, there's a lot of states that's worse.
Yeah. And it was, I would say it's definitely worth it.
Yeah.
So. Is it worth it for you guys being public land hunters going down there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're never going to run into, this is loaded. You're never going to run into an age class like they have down there. In your typical over-the-counter state, in the quantity that I did, at least. I mean,
yeah,
there was a lot of racked bucks moving. I mean, it was prime time too, don't get me wrong, but it was cool. I mean, at the time, I don't know if I just, like I said, had it in my head, like, oh, this is Iowa, blah, 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 this isn't that cool, but looking back on it, it's like I've never seen 9 shooters in 4 days, ever.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, buddy, you've been down here, and it's been good, but it's never been quite that good, so, yeah.
So pissing me off all the time when I come down by you, and they're like, right there!
Bud had a disappointment this year.
And last year.
And last year. He's come close. You just need more time off of work. But that's a whole nother ball of worms. okay.
Let's finish it up.
Yeah,
would you rather?
Would you rather, Zeb?
All right.
Let's finally hit it.
Oh, let's make sure I get this right. I've been thinking about this ever since you brought it up. So I'll leave the fuckery out of this one. So, would you rather go back to age, let's say, 17, with the knowledge you have now, and give up the first, I'm assuming you guys started hunting at 12, and give up the first 4 or 5 years that you started hunting, to start at age 17 with the knowledge you have now when it comes to deer hunting? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Would you rather keep your hunting career how it is right now, or go back to when you were 17 with the knowledge you have now, erasing those first 5 years of your hunting career?
Does that include the experiences I had between 12 and 17?
Yep. Yeah. So you erase, you never hunted. You can go back, and the first time you went in the woods was 17, but you're armed with the knowledge you have now. Or you keep everything how it was, how you've started your career since you started hunting.
Mine's easy.
I'll go. Do you want to go first, bud?
You want me to go first?
Sure.
Just based on be all sentimental, I'll still take my 12 to 17. Just a simple fact, my dad passed away when I was 18. So I'll appreciate the time that I had hunting with him for those years. I wish I could have those every year.
Absolutely, man.
Every year I go out, I wish I could go back out with him. That's what it's all about. I look at that with my son. And I know, Zep, you're going to look at that with your kids. And you're going to look at that, and those are going to be your years. Those are the years that you appreciate. Eric is probably going to be different, but I look back, 12 to 17, I'll take all those years back. All those years I went out to with my dad in Colorado that I hunted hand in hand with him. Those were my years.
Absolutely. That's what it's about, man. I feel I'm not in that situation, but man, I can't imagine being in that situation, and I feel that hard.
Yeah. All right, Eric, what's your answer?
Yeah, follow that up, Eric.
I don't know how to follow that up. Frick. I think I even shed a tear on that one. God damn.
Yeah.
Hit me in the feels.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm going to agree with you, bud. I wouldn't trade those years for the world. I absolutely would not. Having the knowledge that I have now, I don't have any regrets. Like, growing up, out in the Nicolet National Forest with my dad, not seeing shit, I loved it. I loved him putting me in a ground blind, him climbing up in his climber 200, 300 yards away, saying, sit here till I come back at night. And you're sitting there like, all right.
No, so.
And, yeah, staying, like, him coming back and freaking not seeing shit, happy as a clam. We were both happy as a clam. And heading back to a freaking pop-up camper when it's 20 degrees outside with a kerosene freaking heater. Man, that was awesome. I didn't grow up bow hunting because I didn't have a bow at that time, but like, you know, that opening weekend at gun camp that in Townsend, fucking Wisconsin, Nicolet National Forest on a freaking back road that you can't freaking get many vehicles down with. There was always snow up there, good foot of snow, so it was always an adventure getting back. I mean, I wouldn't replace that for. Take my knowledge. I'll take those hunts.
Yeah.
No regrets. Because, I mean, in all the knowledge that I do have now, I wouldn't have, and a lot of guys don't understand this, and this is what concerns me about some of the youth hunters coming up, is...
You wouldn't have your drive if it wasn't for that.
I would not have this drive. I wouldn't have the drive. I wouldn't have the appreciation of... Every animal that I shoot, I agree with Bud. I'll keep the memories and no regrets at all.
Man, another one right in the feels. That you boys are on your game. That's right up there with everything that I'm about, man. It's like rifle season comes about like this year. I mean, that tradition, and I mean, a spike comes in front of me, I'm filling my buck tag. Because I remember, you know, growing up, my dad was going up north all the time. And so, but I got an identical twin brother. So, you know, growing up, me and him, and it's like, all right, we're going to get home from school. And we got to wait until, you know, 5:30 because it gets dark at 4:30. And we get to call up to deer camp and see what they killed, you know, see what they killed today. And, you know, there was no cell phones. There was nothing. You know, like Eric mentioned, all right, sit here and I will pick you. Do not move from this spot and I will be here after dark. And when you're 12 years old up north, like, you know, like Eric mentioned, we're in the Hayward area where we hunt. Oh, my God. You want to talk about being scared when it starts getting dark, head blow down looking like a fucking bear and you name it, but you're sitting there shaking in your boots and it's like, nope, I was told not to move. And to have those, feelings growing up and the sentiment there, like, I mean, it's a whole nother podcast that we could get into with, you know, me and you having young boys growing up. Like, the shit I worry about is that now with all this technology, they don't know what it's going to be like sitting on a stand. Like, do I take my kid's cell phone when we go hunting and be like,
well, here's a comp-.
You know,
I took my boy hunting. I mean, I took him hunting right. This year. We sat in a pole building and I made him stoop over the stove and stuff like that. But
man,
yeah, and we watched a Packer game on the TV same time. But he's 2.5. I brought him out. But Christ, it's like. Well, Christ, my fucking dad brought me out fucking grouse hunt when I was still in the car seat.
Oh, man. It's just, see, those are the things, like, that you look back on. I remember I got pictures at my parents where me and my brother, dad had, like, those old army duffel bags. And he would take us goose hunting and stuff. And me and Zach would each have our own army duffel bag that we'd have to hide in with our fucking starter kits. You know, when the shit was coming in and they'd shoot them and we'd run out there like dogs getting them and so, I mean,
long yeah end. they cheaped out. They didn't have to have fucking dogs. They had you.
Yeah, exactly. They had two of us. But I agree with both of you guys, and that was kind of where, you know, I had thought about this question. I wanted to make it something like a little sentimental, because that's something I hold. That tradition is something that I hold deep, you know, in my roots. And like we mentioned with the rut camp that I have here for bow hunting, which it would be awesome for you guys to be a part of, is a tradition that, you know, I don't want it to die with everything that's going on. So I'm in the same boat. I've got, you know, you guys remember that excitement when you actually saw a deer when you were that old?
Well,
and you had an icicle down your leg later on because you pissed on your leg when you saw a deer and you were so jacked up. Well, and
Jesus Christ, I shot my first fucking buck out of state before I could even buy a tag in Wisconsin.
No shit.
Yeah. I shot Amelia out in Colorado. Literally, like, I just got my hunter safety in time in order to hunt Colorado.
And those are the things you never forget, man. Like,
nah, dude, it's insane. Like I got Wisconsin hunts that I feel like I forget. But, like, my Colorado hunts with my dad, yeah, I don't forget that shit.
I remember the first deer I ever killed. We ended up having to I hit it in the liver. It was during a T-zone hunt when we had those T-zone hunts up north. And
I had one of those that pissed my dad off on.
Yeah, so my dad wasn't there when we found it because I was hunting with my grandpa, and we get back to the truck and to the cabin that we were at and everything, and my dad comes running out of the truck, and at that point my dad was a really big dude and he don't run, and he comes running up to me, picked me up off my feet, you know, and we're just celebrating. It's like, yeah, I shot a lot of deer after that, but those 12 to 17 years, man, those are important. They really make or break. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I'm happy to see guys just getting into it at all ages, but it's something else.
Yeah. No, I got two quick stories before we end this. I want to say, like, my first vivid memory that I can actually remember when I was, like, 3 years old was the first time my dad took me out hunting. I remember this. 3 years old. Like, he took me down the spot, walked down railroad tracks. Frickin', he brought hot chocolate, brought some frickin' Oreo cookies, and I was frickin' moving around this little ground blind that he frickin' developed. Like, I 3 years old, and I frickin' remember that shit. Like, it's amazing. That's, like, one memory that I remember, and I'll keep this brief since we're 2.5 hours in this almost. Is my first.
Well, no, we're in part two, Eric. Now we're really an hour and a half.
Yeah. Posted.
Yeah. Was my first Northwoods deer camp with him. He had a pop-up camper. Like I actually know that year, I think we were staying in my uncle's. It wasn't a pop-up. It was one of those ones that went back of a truck. So we had 3-4 guys jam-packed in those, that small camper with the kerosene heater. And yeah. And we ended up, no, he did have the pop-up that year because we threw the deer on top of the pop-up camper to get him home. But well, anyway.
You had a good year. What are you complaining about?
Yeah, but I mean, that hunt was magical because freaking, it was like my first or second year up there, and we had a big snowstorm up there, like 6 to 10 inches. And we're like, this is going to be awesome because the way we were set up was on these ridges, and it was overlooking these pine type thickets, and it was just freaking magical with the snow coming down, freaking dad sitting in the blind next to me, freaking all this snow on the pine needles, and we had these two does just slowly, you know, meandering through the pine needles, and they ended up working, I don't know, 40 to 50 yards away from them, and my dad shot both those does, and I mean, just that setting of dragging out a deer with my dad when I was 12 years old with 6 to 10 inches of snow on the ground, up in the north woods, freaking snow on the pine needles, snow just fluttering as we're dragging out the deer. Man, that was awesome. That was awesome.
Those are the memories. It's like, it's crazy. Like you look back at like when you're 12, 14, 16, you just have some random hunt.
Yeah.
But you remember the entire hunt.
Yeah.
You might not even see a freaking deer during that hunt. But you remember the whole hunt.
Yeah.
And now we go and do all these hunts, and then a year later, we don't even remember it.
Yeah. That's why, you know, when we talked, bud, about doing this YouTube BS, I mean, like, why are we doing this? And like Zeb was saying, you take a look back and you're like, I'm so happy I filmed that. Because it was like I was there yesterday.
Yeah.
And just like with all the fishing videos, and I mean, Andy catching a walleye and a stick. Like, we have all
He didn't catch the walleye. He caught the stick. He caught the stick that caught the walleye.
Those are all the stuff, man, that, you know, this year, I told my wife, it's like, all right, next year I'm going to film just not for anybody, but for me. And, you know, hopefully my son someday looks back at it and is like, oh man, this is pretty cool. And if he does, if he gets into hunting, if he doesn't, you know, that's his own prerogative, but.
Yeah.
You know, I do these stupid, like, Snapchats just for me, and it's like, man, if I could have, like, a full video of that, you know, that whole situation, it'd be...
Dude, I totally believe it, because it's... Like, if I could have went back, like, I see, like, all the photo albums, and even Eric's seen it. I literally have a box full of racks of all my dad's.
Yep.
I don't know the stories behind them. I literally have a picture and I have the rack. But it's like, man, it's like, how'd that deer come in? How'd he shoot it? It's like, I don't know any of that. Man, it's like, that's the cool part.
So that, you know, having those pictures is something that, you know, like the tradition I keep harping on, like, you know, I look back at deer camp and see people that I just hear, you know, they're legends to me. You know, I never got to hunt with them. I never got to fill the buck pull up with them up in the Northwoods. Like, you see all those pictures.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of one of the things that drives me. And then I look at those albums that my dad has. So, you know, nowadays everything's online, everything's virtual, everything's digital. But I told my wife, that I wanted photo albums, like, printed out. And so now every year, for my Christmas present, hopefully this year again, she asked me for photos, and or she'll just steal them, and she'll print them out.
Now yeah, steal them off Facebook. Just print them out. That's all I care about.
Oh, yeah. And well, the really good ones I can't post, you know. And she prints those out, and I've got photo
albums. What, the here. Ones with the GPS coordinates? That's the one she can't print out, or what?
Well, that or the half-naked drag outs. All the good stuff. And that's another thing that goes with those, you know, in my opinion, the traditional deer camps are those old photos. And, yeah. You know, my goes out or the fucking Google Drive or the cloud collapses. You know, no one has the password to see those photos. None of that matters when it's sitting in my living room. And anyone that comes into the house can pick up that album and start looking at stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, you know, to go on my thing, like when my dad passed away. The first thing and Eric's seen it. I have a, what is that? Oh, 5 foot high, Eric?
Yep.
It's like a 5 foot by 2 foot picture frame. It's probably got like 30 or 40 pictures on it. And it's nothing but me and my dad. Dude, it has nothing, dope. It's nothing but, I mean, not the, you know, not the, you know, Grim and Shine, but dude, it's nothing but us hunting pictures.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool to have that. Like, it's one thing to look at things on your phone, but man, to have that in your hand, knowing that, like, this is here unless, like, a fucking whatever happens that takes it away. Like,
well, yeah, unless there's a fire at my house, I'm going to have this. I have this. To show, not to mention all of his mounts and everything that I bought.
That's another thing. Like, there's some guys that we had one of our members of our deer crew pass this past year, and he was like another grandpa to me. And it's like, oh, where are those mounts gonna go? Or, you know, my grandpa gave up hunting, and he's the one I shot like the first 5-10 deer with. And oh, I know we're moving out of the house. You know, this rack, blah blah blah. I was like, I'll take them. So I took them. It's like, oh, they don't mean nothing. They mean a lot to me because I remember when I was fucking 6 years old, you know, looking at those and hearing the story. Like,
dude, my entire house is nothing but mounts.
That's so
cool. I have mounts from, well, me, my dad. I have mounts from both my grandparents. I have mounts from my great aunt, my great uncle. It's basement, upstairs. I understand them. It's like, yeah, that's they were proud enough to have it mounted. I'm proud enough to have it shown.
Well, it's not like hanging a picture from some fucking random famous guy on your wall. It's like, I would rather look up and see something like that. Like, I don't have those many of those mounts like you do, but like, I totally get it. And I would love, you know, to have that when, oh, you know, you talk to so many guys like, oh, no one wants these when I'm dead. Like, that's not the legacy I want. I want somebody in my situation that understands the tradition and can look up and be like, oh man, they drug that out 2.5 miles in Iowa on their backs after the car broke. And
if you want to hunt like that, okay, so my dad, I have a mount of a swan.
Really?
Yeah. And Dale, my son Dale, loves that mount. He goes up and pets that mount because it's a full wingspan. So it's a 5-foot fucking wingspan of the swan in my living room.
That's fucking awesome.
But that hunt, now my dad hunted South Dakota. I believe that was his second swan hunt. And now every time he went and he'd come in on this side of the lake, some swans would swim into the other side. So then, go back the next day, he'd freaking belly crawl to the other side of the pond, they'd swim the other side. And yeah, it was like a freaking 4 or 5 day battle of him belly crawling through the CRP field, battling this freaking swan.
This freaking cat and mouse game.
Yep. And then finally, that one day, he was able to freaking belly crawl through all these freaking cattails, and he finally got that swan. That's the swan that's upstairs.
Oh, man, that's so fucking cool. God, that's cool. And that story is going to live on.
Yeah, it's...
And even if, you know, something did happen to that mount and your son remembers that, like, that's still going to live on. I used to pet this thing that blah, 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 and... Oh, man, that's cool. People don't understand it if they're not,
It's not just a mount. It's a story.
Well, so I feel, this might sound like a dick, but I feel bad for people that don't celebrate things like this. Like, you know, even if it's fucking football where they're so into sports and they've got the winning football that was signed by all the Packers from that Super Bowl year and you know, they talk about it. You know, my grandpa was there, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter what the tradition is, but it's the people I feel sorry for that don't have anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is getting pushed to the side right now with, you know, social media and all the shit, you know, it's great in ways and it's horrible in others. Those stories, like what you had just said, like, how fucking cool is that? You know, like,
yeah.
That's just cool to be able to understand all that. It's just freaking cool, man. For a dead bird in your living room.
Yep.
Can you imagine how hard that fucker is to move? Because, you know, it's a full fucking swan mount. And that thing sits a foot and a half off the wall. I moved that thing while it was in his office, moved it to my apartment, moved it back to my mom's. Then moved it to this house. Man, that thing is a bitch to fucking move. But I managed. It's fine. And I appreciate it every fucking time. Oh, and I love it.
You know, that's one of those things.
Because that thing is like, you got to move it, and then you got to balance, like, the wings. And, yeah, the supports. And, you know, when you're driving down the road.
But, you know what's really good about that, too, is your dad's looking down just fucking laughing at you when you're doing that.
Yeah. Yes, because he knows that I'm fucking appreciating it.
Oh, yeah. I think about that, like, we've had a couple guys pass in our deer camp, and, you know, we've got this thing where we wear a blaze orange ribbon for him or whatever, and, man, I'll be walking in, you know, it'll be fucking pitch black way up north with, you know, I'm thinking, I don't care how old you are, like, the dark still gets you. Fucking, I jump a grouse and I just ball shit my pants by a bear, you know? And I'm just sitting there, like, I'll calm down and be like, oh man, I bet you Lloyd's up there just fucking laughing right now, going, you idiot, you know? And just having that.
It's only a fucking grouse!
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, boys, hate to shut this good storytelling time down, but, man, those were some good stories. I think we're, like Zeb said, we're going to have to, you know, get Zeb back on and do some gun camp stories, just outdoor stories in general would be awesome. Even to get, it'd be cool to get the group of guys that we talked to, get 7-8 guys on here just to BS some night where it's just a cool podcast just to talk, so.
Let's do it in person.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome.
I got a pool table. I got a bar with no fucking beer in it.
I'll bring some.
I got plenty of fucking liquor. Everybody brings liquor over to the bar, and then they take fucking 2 drinks out of it, and then they leave the bottle, so I got plenty of fucking liquor.
But I'm going to shut the podcast down here. I thanks for listening for all you guys. Got long-winded. This is going to be a two-parter, like I said. This will be the second part. So, yeah, we'll have more good content like this for you guys to come. So, thanks for listening. We appreciate you all out there.
Well, folks, that's going to wrap up this week's episode. This episode brought up a lot of great memories, along with some recent memories from the 2021 Iowa archery season. I want to thank you for listening. Hopefully this brought up some great hunting memories from your past. And if you want to watch the video, you can find the video on our YouTube channel. The video is called Two Dudes and Two Bucks. Hopefully you enjoyed this lesson, and we appreciate you. And have a great week. Looking forward to seeing you guys next week.